Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday. No, it's not. It's Thursday. I just can't read my own writing. You know, I got the calendar behind me. I got August 8th right, though, before you two guys get too excited here.
Do you have the year right?
13. Perfect. I've been doing a lot of stuff for 14 this morning.
Perfect.
It just kind of drove me. 196th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, community commenter Ron Pierre.
Thank you.
See, I'm going to do this one right for you. Even get you on microphone so people can hear you.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad to be on microphone again, Brian.
Yeah.
It's really a thrill.
Oh, this afternoon we're going to talk a little bit about, well, what's been keeping Ron busy for the last little bit is he's been, running around from here to there and spending time in this place and that place. And we'll talk about some of those things. It's not an extended community comment. It's a different twist here as Ron's been doing some cool stuff, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, news and information time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ron Pierre on this Thursday. Let's see if I can remember that. Our quote this afternoon, Thomas Jefferson. Now, it's not quite Attila the Hun like you wanted, but we're getting there. Sometime between 1743 and 1826 said, quote, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just." How's that for a thought?
That is absolutely perfect, Brian.
I thought you might appreciate that one. Not the Thomas Jefferson part, but that's okay. Hey, you've got buddies in D.C., right?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I'm going to D.C. next week as part of a strategic panel.
What are they saying about these goofballs that threw paint on the Lincoln Memorial?
I haven't heard anybody, you know, I haven't heard any feedback on that at all. I just, that stuff's pretty...
it's symptomatic of something.
Yeah, I think it's symptomatic of a lot of things that are going on right now across the country.
Now, you were old enough to be around with the anti-war protests in the 60s, right?
I was coming in out of San Francisco, my friend, from a little place called Vietnam.
Okay.
And I remember landing at Travis Air Force Base and taking my uniform off to fly commercially
the
out
rest
of San Francisco. Yeah, the rest of the way. So, yes, I did. And two tours in that part of the world, and then a tour in Korea. And, yeah.
You're a Korean War veteran?
No, I was in Korea after I had the honor of going to Korea and then to Vietnam. So,
oh, okay.
So it was just a year remote in Korea and then in and out of Vietnam a couple of times.
How about, what is your read or your buddy's feedback about what's going on the Korean Peninsula? Is it as hot as what I'm hearing, but we're just not getting coverage because nobody's dead yet?
I think it's always been a hot spot, and it's always been one of those we probe them, they probe us, and there's always been that amount of tension up on the DMZ. When I was in Korea in the late 60s, early 70s, we were building a sensor system on along the DMZ, and so we could see what the other side was doing. And of course, you know, the Pueblo incident and all of those things. So we've never ended that conflict, Brian.
Yeah, no kidding. the trial that's going. I know we're going to get to the reserve.
Oh yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The trial that's going on with the fellow that lost his name.
Snowden? Manning.
No.
Or the guy in Fort Hood, Texas.
Yes, the Fort Hood one. How bothersome is that for you?
Personally?
Yeah. Well,
as a retired military guy, yes. It's bothersome, but probably the most bothersome part of it is the failure of the government to recognize that that was an act of terrorism. You listen to the speech that this person had and the tendencies he had when he was going through his military training and the speeches he had prior to the incident. there was a lot of flags in that particular case that should have set a lot of people off. In terms of his military courts-martial, that's going to do what it's going to do, you know, regardless of what happens and what he wants to do. But it's a military courts-martial, and I think one of the things that people that haven't lived in that environment don't understand is that that is a different judicial system, if you will, from what we have in civilian life. But I'm happy he's under a courts-martial, and I think the judge in the case is being very meticulous in what she lays out, and I think we'll see the results that will provide the protection for the individual, but also provide justice for the victims. And I think, to me personally, the biggest injustice is the fact that those are not terrorist activities and activities under a state of war.
Well, he's certainly seeming to want to make it that.
Yeah, he wants to make it that. The victims want to make it that.
So what's the hesitation?
The government. The administration, I think.
Not the military government.
Not the military government, no. The military would do that and salute smartly and give those people the Purple Hearts they deserve and the combat benefits that those families deserve.
Because without it, they don't get those benefits,
exactly.
Right?
And I don't think that's workplace violence. You know, somebody walks in the door of your radio station with a crowbar.
That's how they're playing.
That's how the government is kind of, the political element is playing that. And to me, an attack on a military installation is, like in the old days when they came in and attacked the fort. That's a situation that we have. They're attacked a military installation.
And somehow there's a spin on. Is it just trying to save money?
No, I think it's politically. I think it's political correctness, to be real blunt.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Funny how it took him that long to get to that point.
Well, I have to be careful, I still, in some ways.
Oh, that's right, because we now are archived on the web, so somebody could.
Yeah, somebody saying all this.
Yeah. Pierre, huh?
Yeah,
let's see what he had to say.
Yeah. Right.
Somehow, though, I sense that they would probably be coming after me more than you.
Well, probably.
Yeah. So I'm setting myself up.
Okay. So now somebody will want a community comment or something like that at a later point.
Yeah, from Mobile. Oh, jeez. If nothing else, it's not dull knowing the inside stuff and seeing how it's playing out.
Page. And I think that's why, I still am actively involved in that in a volunteer role that has grown leaps and bounds in the last 3 years. it's take a volunteer job and turn it into a full-time job.
Salute the volunteer. KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Mark the dates August 14th through the 25th for the 117th annual Humboldt County Fair in Ferndale. Beginning opening day, there'll be 8 days of fast horse racing. Competing beef and dairy cattle, goats, poultry, sheep, and swine will be on display and judged. The flower pavilion will be filled with beautiful plants grown by county gardeners. The art pavilion will have many delights for the eye, and enjoy the judged exhibits of locally made items, from baked goods to hand-spun yarn, with much in between such as decorated potatoes, scarecrows, quilts, rugs, and home brews. There'll be plenty to eat and drink, so you can treat yourself to corn dogs and cotton candy. The commercial exhibits building will feature fascinating products, and of course there's the Ferris wheel and other rides the kids will want to try. For hours and information, call 786-9511. That's 786-9511. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people, places, and things that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, Street 24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ron Pierre. Ron, you may be familiar with him and his attitude through community comment, but he's also the Ombudsman Director for California, and I guess you're saying a weak-minded volunteer because you don't realize that there's choices. It's yes, 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 and yes.
Yes. Well, this is I started out as an ombudsman, and then one thing led to another, and I took over the state about 2 years ago, Brian, and now I'm on the National Strategic Planning Committee for Employer Support for Guard and Reserve. We do ombudsman cases and administrative mediation, for service members returning from deployments, and it's extremely rewarding. We have 30 volunteers across the entire state of California.
Now, Ryan, you were saying, just briefly, you said National Guard and Reserve.
Right.
And then you said military returning.
Right. Well, you know,
now,
that's
at one point, those weren't the same thing.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Military returning right now, a significant number of those people are guardsmen and reservists. The whole military structure of the United States has changed dramatically since about 1993. And I think a lot of Americans are not aware of what's happened. It used to be the National Guard and Reserve Forces were called weekend warriors. You can remember that when you were growing up, Ryan.
Sure. Well, and seeing them out here in Eureka, sure. There's a major installation. You'd see them go driving off somewhere Saturday morning, and they'd be coming back Sunday afternoon.
Not
somewhere.
The case right now. Yeah. And we're looking at reserve component forces, Army Reserve, Army National Guard, Air Force Reserve, Air Force National, Air National Guard, Coast Guard Reserve, Marine Corps Reserve, Navy Reserve. Those components are all part of reserve component forces that have been deployed really in significant numbers since September 2001.
Now, the National Guard and Reserve, Ron, initially, what was their role?
Their initial role was a state force. Many National Guard units started out as a state militia.
So kind of backfill
right.
The home front.
And then we came along with things called U.S. Federal or U.S. Title 10 code that allowed the President of the United States to call up significant components of the reserve and guard. And one of the things that's just come out recently, in fact, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today is that there is a new strategic posture in the U.S. government called the new normal, for sake of a better term. But
don't we hear about that in the economic side?
We hear about that, and it's coming out of the it's coming out of the same folks. But the new normal for the military is recurring deployments of Guard and Reserve component forces to all theaters of operation. And you know, it doesn't matter whether it's the Pacific or Africa or wherever. We're going to see significant numbers of reservists. There's just a little map for you to look at that you're going to see reservists deployed now as part of an operational force structure of the American military.
Now, to me, that seems goofy, because if you've got professional career military folks, their training is going to be a little different. Their attitude is going to be a little different. The commitment is going to be a little bit different. The family support is going to be a little bit. I mean, everything is a higher
it's
level
different.
Of commitment, I would guess.
Right. But if you look at the force components we have right now, it's almost a 50-50 mix, guard forces and reserve component forces and active forces. And, yes, the tail that's associated, the economic tail that's associated with your active forces is different than your reserve components. You don't pay medical care. You only pay medical care for your reserve component forces and their families while that person's deployed or in a deployed status. You don't pay retirement.
So with some of these folks coming back and they've got the latent problems that will pop up.
Right.
If they're not actively engaged at that time in military service, they're SOL?
They go back to their civilian jobs. And that's where
in the problem. So if I have a post-stress syndrome.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say.
Exactly.
Space. And that happens 2 years after I get back? The military or the government
you
will
have to go
say,
back into the,
say, la vie?
Well,
you're
you'll
on
have
your
to
own?
Go in and get it validated. You know, how long were you deployed? Did you have medical treatment at that point? You know, it's
no support unless
there
it's
is not
proven.
The support you have. And, you know, your active duty forces have a military plan called TRICARE. You're only under that while you're in a deployed status. And so
now we've heard ugly stories about Walter Reed and some of the other
exactly.
other military hospitals. Is this compounding that situation?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, because what you have are reserve component people who have been deployed five, six times over the course of 10 years or so. In fact, you have reservists who have actually been deployed since 1993, so almost a whole career.
Same individual?
Same individual five, six times.
How do you get off that hamster wheel?
You don't. until
so you're part-time. Their commitment to you is part-time. You're trying to keep things together, and there's
and the new normal that we're talked about is the new strategic push of the military force structure is that new normal is going to be a component of reserve and guard component forces, as the map shows, virtually worldwide, from the Pacific to the Middle East.
So for an individual, wouldn't it make more sense to volunteer for their military branch of choice and go in as a career rather than the National Guard Reserve where you get...
But again, what drives everything in this whole equation is dollars.
How that works.
Yeah, it is. So you want to keep your active force as small as possible to keep your dollars down, and then you bring all of these reserve guys. So it's not a good picture.
It's 3:30.
Choosing new furniture for your home can be a challenge. Will the colors match? Will the fabrics go well? Will it be comfortable? And will it last? Solve these questions with a visit to Vern's Furniture. Vern's Furniture Consultants have the knowledge to put the right room together for you, whether it's the living room, bedroom, dining room, or laundry room. Vern's has what you're looking for. Free delivery and so much more. Vern's Furniture in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ron Pierre. Ron's, head volunteer. How's that?
Well, I don't know.
For the National Guard and Reserve.
Well, no, I guess I'm just one of many.
Okay.
That are ombudsman, I guess.
But a lot of guys don't go to the mat as you are. Now, they may not be in a situation where they can. Right. They may not have the feathers on their sleeve. Et cetera, et cetera. So they have traction with their comments.
Right.
So as you're looking at this whole concept, Ron, of National Guard and Reservists supplanting, replacing, pushing out, or being forced to do that by the military and the administration over the last...
Well, I don't think that's military, Brian, as much as it is the national philosophy of how we have to use military resources. So the National Guard is part of the force structure that is being employed.
Part of the military.
Right.
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 So whether it's Clinton, Bush 2, or Obama, take your pick.
Right.
This big push, is it, I can't imagine, and granted I was much younger and probably a lot more naive, but that Reagan would have done this. Or others that were very strong militaristic in their support. Kennedy,
Thing? Let me answer that this way. Because I was on active duty from the late 60s through the Reagan era. And when Reagan was president, there were resources put into the military. Improved housing, improved pay, improved family support structures. We went in with a whole intricate structure of family support. Right now, for example, the structures we're relying on to do a lot of the fixes are structures that were developed at the end of World War II. The Veterans Administration is a good example. We're going to have a seminar and teach you how to write a resume. Most young people that are 18 to 30 years of age aren't going to really look at some guy teaching them how to write a resume. They're going to go to their smartphone or and say, well, I want to look at a job in East Clackamore, Nebraska, and they're going to find a job in East Clackamore, Nebraska. Moreover, there are applications that they can use on their smartphone to find that stuff.
Yeah, there's no resume anymore. Yeah, it's filling out an electronic form.
Why do I need to go to EDD and sit down in the class and somebody teach me how to write a resume?
So is it an antiquated philosophy that's permeating through this, or is it a structure that hasn't kept up?
I think the structure hasn't kept up, and I think the philosophy is the philosophy of what we had at the end of World War II. We'll have these big VA hospitals. We send people in the VA hospitals to get fixed there. Perhaps there's a different way of solving the problems. You asked about PTSD, and I've dealt with some cases in mediation with people with PTSD. And when we're dealing with those cases, in some cases, to incorporate families and some of the things that are available for a person in their own area may be more beneficial than putting somebody into that VA hierarchy where you have a military-based infrastructure that's a product of the 1950s and 1960s. And that's what the VA structure we have today is.
So as you consider some of the options that are out there, now, you spent some time overseas in foreign countries.
In fact, Brian, I just...
What's the difference? Is it a philosophical one? Is it an economic one? Because I can't imagine that every military across the country has a percentage of their folks on food stamps or the equivalent thereof.
Interesting laugh, Brian. I just got back from Lithuania last week. I was in Lithuania with Lithuanian land forces as part of a Department of Defense, Department of State specialty team, working with those land forces on how to set up family support structures and how to set up a mediation process so they could work problems within the military structure. And in the Lithuanian military is relatively new. They really came about in 1989. So the hierarchy and the leadership in that military are majors and lieutenant colonels, but they are all products of not the old Soviet era, but the new Lithuanian patriotic era. And so they're concerned about the families. And the questions that we got as a Department of Defense team were related primarily to how do we set up these structures. So we talked about how you do a family support center, how you work about those things. And interestingly enough, when we started talking social media, there wasn't a single person in the cadre of senior enlisted personnel or the military hierarchy that didn't have a smartphone in their hand. So they were interested in what we could bring to them and what we could furnish to them, and then they wanted to build their own system. But they recognized at the beginning that they had to take into account family structures. One of the things that was interesting to me was that they wanted to incorporate the good things that we had in our military, and they had been deployed. The Lithuanians are proud members of NATO. That their president is now the new head of the European Union, so she's out there in front trying to put her country in a position where they have the military structure to support what they need.
Kind of sounds like it was an opportunity for you to have an Etch-a-Sketch, shake it up, not lose the memory, and start over what you would like to have here that they're willing to embrace, that you're running into stone walls.
Absolutely. And the neat part about it was is that I didn't have a cultural appreciation for the Lithuanians. And so the State Department arranged a cultural tour for us to start our bilateral working arrangement. And it was absolutely eye-opening to get the enthusiasm and the depth that the people gave us briefings about what their country was all about. I was just absolutely excited the whole time.
Patriotic passion is fun.
Absolutely.
KINS, News and Information Times 342. We'll be back with more from Ron Pierre.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 345. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ron Pierre. Ron, so looking at what your excitement is coming out of, with the Lithuania experience, with some of the other stuff that's going on, seeing the reserves, how they're being inserted in rather than full presence military or
right.
Career military. Is this a trend? Is this a trend that's going to expand? Is this a trend that's going to contract? Is it like the wave hitting the shore and then pulling back? What is this thing like now? Normal is kind of this innocuous, goofy thing.
You know, I think what it's going to take, Brian, and people who have a commitment and a real passion for what they believe in, to be able to go out and say, you know, we've got to change some things. I'm going into Washington next week as a part of an 8-person steering committee to talk about strategic things and mediation programs with the Guard and Reserve. And I'm not bashful in bringing up the positions. And the advantage I get from coming from California is we do more ombudsman cases, the one-on-one situations, if you will, with people who have problems in the workplace than almost any other state in the country.
Because of the population, because of the military presence?
Because of the tremendous size of the reserve component forces in the state of California. There are three states that lead the way, Texas, California, and Pennsylvania are the three biggest states.
Pennsylvania.
Right. And Pennsylvania's got a good combination of Army and forces. But if you look across the state in California, there's really only one state that's got all seven reserve component forces as integral part of the state. So from San Diego to the Oregon border, you've got everything from Coast Guard reservists to Marine reservists.
Everybody's
to Air
there.
Force. Everybody's here, and everybody's here in a big way. You know, you have a great big airlift wing that's a full-up reserve wing at outside of Travis Air Force Base. You have big Army bases. You have drone programs at Beale and at March. You have Coast Guard Reserve at Oakland. And Coast Guard Reserve at Oakland literally covers the area all the way past the the Oregon border. You look at the size of Coast Guard Humboldt Bay, for example, and the mission responsibilities. Very few states have the military reserve force structure that California has. So naturally, we have a lot of cases. But that gives me a big voice when I talk at the table.
So they almost have to pay attention to you?
Now that's the unfortunate thing.
Yeah, you know, that is a double-edged sword.
Yeah. And one of those things that, as you can tell, I'm fairly passionate about doing this program, and that's one of the reasons, you know, I'm one of the few active duty people in this, you know, the retired active duty in the structure. Most of them are reservists, and when they talk about military service, you know, I had 28 years in the active Air Force.
It's a different...
So I have a different perspective because I understand the need for it.
So as you look at what's going on, Ron, what's the one cool thing? And what's the thing that you're going back loaded for bear about?
The coolest thing that I pull out of this whole thing is when I pick up the phone and talk one-on-one with the service member, and I'm able to work a problem for that person and solve it with that person's employer. That's, you know, there are some of those mediations that I do on a, you know, almost a daily basis that I walk away from and say, damn, you did a good job on that. The thing that I am most dissatisfied with are the way that these folks are being treated. Not only the military member or the service member, but the service member's family, because the uncertainty in things like medical care, medical treatment, family support, heck, how do I get paid if something happens to my spouse? Those are the things
it's
that
almost
are
announced. A second-class citizen in the,
exactly.
in the military family.
Right. And so you got to get past that reserve component forces as weekend warriors. They are wearing the same uniform that you're wearing. They're just as proud that you were, that, or you are, that you're in a military structure.
Thanks for coming by. Enjoy your trip back there.
Thank you.
We'll hear explosions from the East Coast. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.